Basic Brewing Radio is supported by the American Homebrewers Association, makers of the free Brew Guru app. Brew Guru is an essential tool for beer lovers and brewers who like saving money on beer and brewing great beer at home. The app offers a searchable map for locating nearby discounts on beer, food, and brewing suppliers. What's more, Brew Guru has hundreds of proven homebrew recipes, including medal winners from the National Homebrew Competition. Check out Brew Guru. It's free and available for iPhone and Android. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, January 25th, 2018. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Gary Glass, director of the American Homebrewers Association, brings us up to date on the National Homebrew Competition and other competitions across the country, previews HomebrewCon coming up in Portland, Oregon, and shares some data about who homebrewers are nowadays. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows, our DVDs, brewers' logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram, at Basic Brewing, and find our show page on Facebook as well. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. And if you do us the favor of rating us on iTunes and maybe leaving a nice comment, they say that'll help new listeners to find us. And if you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. For financial supporters of the show, I sent out an early release link to next week's Basic Brewing video. In that show, Steve Wilkes and I taste the 15-minute all-grain hopstand smash pale ale that I brewed up to see what would happen if you only boil an all-grain wort for 15 minutes. The rest of the general public will see that on this upcoming Monday. Also, next week on this program, I'm planning to post an interview with John Palmer on NIPAs, or New England IPAs. And during that chat with John Palmer, he tastes that beer and gives some feedback. Is it a drinker or is it a stinker? Tune in next week to see. I bottled my Instant Pot wort soured beer yesterday. My wife, Susan, helped me bottle up 7 bottles of that small batch, and this was an extract batch. Very easy to make. I'm looking forward to sharing that with Steve as well on the show. Big news from the American Homebrewers Association this week. AHA founder Charlie Papazian has announced he's leaving the AHA and the Brewers Association effective January 23rd, 2019. Which will be his 70th birthday. I think we all know of Charlie's impact on homebrewing and craft beer in this country. He's been, and around the world, he's been a strong advocate and pioneer in brewing since the 1970s. This upcoming year is going to be a busy one for Charlie. According to the Brewers Association, he'll spend his final year at the BA completing many projects, including a craft brewing history archive project. The archive will house 40 years of craft beer history in the form of more than 100,000 publications, photographs, audio files, or audio tapes, films, videos, and documents, including 140 video interviews of the pioneers of American craft brewing. And it will be accessible to researchers via the BA. Wow. That is a lot of history from one guy. Charlie will also give the keynote address at HomebrewCon in June in Portland. And by the way, this announcement from the AHA and the BA was made after I interviewed Gary Glass for this show. Otherwise, we certainly would have talked about it and would have spent a lot of time on that. How exciting to have built such a body of work and accomplishments and leave on top. And also, the Brewers Associations and the AHA sent out a release saying that that some of Charlie's brewing gear, including his brewing spoon, have arrived at the Smithsonian. So you know you're important when your stuff gets to the Smithsonian Institution. So congratulations, Charlie, on a lifetime of work. And, you know, we'll look forward to this last year of his career. And I'm sure that he's not going to, quote unquote, retire, you know, because he's a very active guy. Back to more local news, at least local to me. Our sponsors, Desiree and Dave of High Gravity in Tulsa, are celebrating an achievement. They have now they now have the licensing to brew full-strength beers at their shop and serve it at Pippin's Tap Room next door. Well, Susan and I went to Tulsa this past Friday to sample the higher-strength beers, and I talked to Desiree outside a standing-room-only tap room. Desiree, here we are at Pippin's Tap Room at High Gravity Home Brewing and Winemaking Supplies in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Hello! Glad to be here.
I am too. Yeah. This is a momentous occasion. As Dave said earlier, he said it took a long time to get to the start.
Yeah, exactly. Almost a year. We've been working on this for almost a year. So, yeah, we had to get the place rezoned. And then after that, we had to deal with having a winery and a brewery and a retail store all in the same location. Abel was really confused over that.
So what are we celebrating here tonight?
Well, we are celebrating the fact that we are able to sell full strength beer now. Because before we were selling, our tap room was just selling low point beer because the property wasn't zoned properly. So tonight, I think it was a week and a half ago, the TTB came through with their approval, and that was the last piece in the puzzle. So, yep, we're celebrating being a real brewery.
And I've sampled some beers, and they're delicious, of course.
Oh, thank you.
So y'all have you've been brewing three two beers. 4% alcohol.
Right.
So now, you know, and you've kind of been brewing with restraints on, and so I think that should make y'all stronger brewers going forward, because you have been brewing with shackles on, you've been brewing with these barriers, with these restraints, and now you don't have those anymore. So now, you know, I think you have all the freedom to be as good as you want to be.
Yeah, I agree. To make good 4% beer is a real challenge, and I think that our kids really stepped up to the plate and pulled it off. I mean, very, very flavorful session beers, and if you can pull that off, you can brew anything.
And you're doing it all with electric brewing systems?
Yep, all electric. One barrel. We're brewing one barrel at a time. We're tiny.
But here at High Gravity, I talk a lot about my electric brew-in-a-bag system and Steve's electric brew-in-a-bag system, but you do up to two barrels, right?
Yeah, we do. We have several breweries that have our two-barrel systems as their pilot system, and we have some where that's their main thing, and they're working it hard, they were great as far as the breweries go, because early on when we were doing this, these they're not your typical home brewer. I mean, they're brewing on they're using these controllers hours out of a day every day, and so they forced us to get better. They forced us to improve on our design. They forced us to make sure it could stand up to a beating, and yeah.
So if these systems and these controllers are robust enough to do work in commercial environments, they're certainly good enough to work at your house.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And we have different levels. I mean, you know, there's like the brew in a bag is a simpler one than, say, the one that's for our two-barrel system, which controls, you know, two pumps, two heating units. It does a lot more. Yeah.
Well, awesome. It's great to be here tonight to celebrate your re-grand opening.
Yeah. And I guess that's how we'll call it. We'll call it our re-grand opening.
And it's only onward from here, right?
Onward and upward. That's right. Onward and upward.
Thanks, Desiree, and thank you. And I understand that people order stuff from you, and they say they thank you for your support of this show. And I want to thank you in person for your support of the show.
Oh, thank you. Oh, yeah, you guys are great. Remember, we had a guy come in yesterday. He came in yesterday when I was, or maybe it was Wednesday. Sorry, it was Wednesday. Like that matters. But he was going through town, and he made a point to come here because he was listening. He listens to your podcast when he's on the road. And so he came through Tulsa, and so he made a point to come here and tell us to thank you, and then stuck around and drank a few beers before he headed out again.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Well, we love y'all.
We love you too.
Well, that was a lot of fun. And again, congratulations to the folks at High Gravity. Very exciting for them. And man, boy, that place was packed. I talked to Amanda and Tim, and we talked. We decided that I need to come back when they have their full selection of beers to talk about the transition from session only to a full range of styles. They didn't have their taps fully stocked the way they wanted to because they didn't know when the licenses were going to come through for sure. For your information, Susan and I also visited American Solera in Tulsa and got a great interview with Chase Healy for a future show. You might recognize his voice. He's formerly of Prairie Artisan Ales, the founder of Prairie Artisan Ales, and now he started up another innovative, successful brewery. So you'll hear that in a couple of weeks. Okay, if you're interested in entering the National Homebrewers Conference, pay close attention. The window is open for entries, but it closes soon. I talked to AHA Director Gary Glass about the details. Gary Glass, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hey, great to be with you again, James.
We are in the midst of preparations for the National Homebrew Competition. Is that right?
That is right. We've got the application window for entries in the National Homebrew Competition, which is the world's largest beer competition, open right now. The application is open through Tuesday, January 30th. So you have a few days left to get yourself entered into the competition.
And what exactly does that entail? I mean, how do they apply and what are they applying for?
So the National Homebrew Competition has 12 different regional judge centers. All the judging is going to be taking place in April. So the application is for members of the American Homebrewers Association. You do have to be a member to enter. But you put in your application and then based on the number of entrants and the judge centers that are selected, we run software that kind of randomly selects people, and we use it to determine how many entries per entrant we can do and which judge centers entrants are entered in. So that's how that process worked. We're dealing with, last year we had 8,600 total entries. When dealing with that number, and then we have to limit each judge center to 750 entries because we need it to be, you know, a reasonable number of entries for those judge centers to be able to handle. So it's complicated, but you know, for people who are selecting multiple judge centers, you're almost assured to get into the competition.
So when they apply, are they required to say how many beers they want to enter?
Yes, yeah, so we would ask at that point how many entries they would like to enter into the competition, up to six. And then once we've done the process, we usually end up at a cap of around four or five entries. And so based on the number of entries somebody said they wanted to get in, that's, you know, and where the cap ends up. So if they had selected five entries and we ended up with a cap of four, then we would then charge them for the four entries once they got through. But they won't actually be charged until after that process has happened, and then they'll go back in and you know, edit their entry details and then pay for their entries at that time.
So if they get their application in on time by the 30th, when will brewers know what the next step is?
Yeah, we'll start notifying people between the 5th of February, you know, the 5th through the 14th of February is when we'll notify entrants. And it doesn't, if you don't get notification right away, that doesn't mean you're not in for sure. We have to go through multiple rounds of selection. So, but as I said, almost everybody gets in. I would say that it's very advisable to select multiple judge centers and know that, you know, our most popular judge centers are Philadelphia and New York. So if you select those two and just those two, your chances are lower than if you select, you know, one of those two plus something a little bit further from that high population area.
So you don't have to pick something that's close to your house.
You don't. And it really doesn't matter where you select it. Obviously, you're going to have to ship your entries, but that's the only real consideration that you have to take into account.
So once they get notified that they got in and how many beers that they can enter, what is the next time frame? What's the next step?
So the judging will all take place. Well, actually, the entry deadline is in March. So they would then, let's see, where is that?
I'm looking at the calendar. I'm cheating.
March. Yeah, I know. I was like, oh, whoops, I meant to have that up. So the shipping window is March 19th through the 30th. And then judging will take place April 6th through the 22nd.
Wow, there's a whole lot of work that's going to be done, not only on the brewers getting their stuff ready, but in all of these judging centers. A lot of coordination going on.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we actually have over 1,100 volunteers that take part in the running the competitions and serving as judges and stewards, sorting entries. It is an enormous amount of work that goes into putting on this competition.
And so if you get past the first round, what's the next step?
Right. So if you score in first, second, or third place in any of one of the 31 categories that we have, then you advance on to the final round of the competition, which takes place at the at HomebrewCon. And we'll be in Portland, Oregon for HomebrewCon this year, and that takes place the last week of June. So then if you did place in one of those first-round competitions, then you ship your entries to Portland, where they'll be judged, and then we'll do the award ceremony on Saturday, June 30th.
Wow. That's it's something to look forward to, and I want to talk about that. So are there any new what's new in the competition, or is there anything new in the competition as far as categories, or what's new?
We did switch up the categories a little bit, but not too much. Just really made them the subcategories and categories more in line with the actual BJCP categories. We do have to condense them down a little bit from what BJCP has, because they just have more than we can potentially handle, and we also try and make the categories as even as possible in terms of number of entries we see, but there's still obviously like American IPA is going to be a really highly entered category. So that's also something I think entrants should take into consideration, is if you're submitting entries, your chances of winning a category go up if you're in a category that doesn't have quite as many entries. And interestingly, our single biggest category is a spice herb vegetable beer category.
All those pumpkin beers.
Well, I think it really does say something about homebrewing, because one of the reasons that we're homebrewers is that homebrewing allows us the opportunity to make unique beers, and that's what homebrewers are doing, is they're making beers that that are only limited by their imagination, and using all kinds of ingredients that you don't normally find in the beers that you find in the grocery store or your liquor store. So I think that's something that's kind of inspiring to me, seeing that, like, yeah, homebrewers are still pushing the envelope with their beers.
Reinheitsgebot be damned, right?
Oh yeah.
is there a category for New England IPAs?
There are several specialty IPA categories that the BJCP uses. There are subcategories. I don't think they're even subcategories. It's like specialty IPA, but they have lots of different descriptions. And so one of those is going to be your best bet for New England IPA.
Next year. It'll have its own category next year. I bet you.
Maybe.
I had to pick on the pumpkin beers. I had to pick on the other one that everybody picks on. So is there anything else that you want to talk about the national competition specifically?
I just think that with this competition, we're really looking at finding the best beers there are. We are actually making some modifications to the score sheet to improve both feedback to the entrants and the speed at which judges can get through it. So we're pretty excited about some of those changes, and we'll get those posted on our website here shortly.
Hmm.
But that's something that's exciting, and I'm expecting that some of these changes will allow us to actually expand the competition in the future, which will keep us ahead of Great American Beer Festival in terms of the world's largest beer competition.
A little internal rivalry there.
It most definitely is.
Well, I got an email from Steven in Portland, Oregon. He says he wants to get into competition brewing, and he said, I want to get started with entering a few this year, but don't really know how to go about it. I joined the AHA earlier today, which you'll be happy about, Gary.
Absolutely.
And can see the competition dates. Any help with this would be appreciated. I was also curious if you had to be present at the competition to receive awards, but maybe I'm getting way ahead of myself here. He's optimistic. And would a clone recipe or kit recipe disqualify you in any way? So I guess let's parse that. He's talking about, I guess, in addition to the dates for the national competition, if you go to the AHA website, homebrewersassociation.org, and if you're a member, you can look at the competitions across the country that are AHA, BJCP sanctioned. And it's been a while since I looked at that. And, man, there are competitions all the time, all over the place, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, and actually, you don't have to be a member to look at those. The BJCP competition, we just have a direct feed from the BJCP on in terms of the sanctioned competition. So anybody can access that information from the AHA website. But yeah, there's a huge number of competitions all over the country and really all over the world.
And there are more benefits than just getting medals from entering a competition. You get feedback from people who know what they're talking about.
Right. Yeah. I mean, one of the big advantages to entering a competition is you get that feedback from judges who. They don't know who you are. All they have is the beer in front of them. So they're not worried about you. Your friends are going to give you feedback, but maybe not the most honest feedback. You're going to get absolutely honest feedback from the judges, and usually they know their stuff really well, and so very helpful feedback in terms of if there are issues with your beer, how you might be able to address those. So it's a great way of getting that kind of anonymous feedback from people who know what they're doing and tasting. So I think it's a great thing for homebrewers to do to get that evaluation. Because I mean, I'm a very experienced judge. I've been judging for many years, but you know, when I'm evaluating my own beers, I've still got my own biases, and I'm not going to be able to really objectively evaluate my own beers. So. It is a great way of getting feedback on the beers you're making.
And you don't have to be present at the competition to receive awards, right?
Right. I'm not aware of any competitions that require being present. And this particular individual is in Portland, where we actually do have a first-round judge center in Portland. So I'll put in a plug for National Homebrew Competition for that gentleman.
And would using a clone recipe or a kit recipe disqualify you anyway? So if you get a recipe that you've, you know, gotten in a book or something like that, is that okay to enter?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, with the BJCP guidelines, there's actually a specialty category for clone beers. My honest opinion on that is that you're probably better off just entering it in whatever style it is rather than entering it as a clone, because judges out there haven't had an opportunity to taste every single beer out there. So, and you know, if you don't have that side-by-side comparison, then, that poses a challenge for judges. Plus if you don't get it absolutely correct and you do have a judge who knows that beer very well, then the beer could be great, but it might not be exactly the beer that you're modeling it after. So I'm a little skeptical about Emptering as a clone recipe, but there's no reason why you can't do that.
And even if you do buy a recipe kit from a homebrew supply store, or even if you do take a recipe out of a homebrewing book and use that recipe, even if you duplicate the ingredients, every homebrewer's beer is going to be a little different because of their processes and their skills. And it's not only your ingredient selection that you're being tested in these competitions, it's your skill and proficiency as a brewer.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the best recipe in the world isn't going to do you any good if you're a lousy brewer. So, and vice versa. So, the recipe you're using, or whether or not you're using an ingredient kit, I mean, that's really irrelevant. And you certainly are eligible to enter a competition. Most competitions do have restrictions on what equipment you can use. So, for example, most competitions, the National Homebrew Competition included, do not allow you to use professional brewing equipment. Mm. So if you happen to have access to a brewery's pilot system, can't enter. But otherwise, or like a brew on-premises kind of scenario where you're brewing on a business's equipment.
Right.
So essentially, if you're actually homebrewing, well, then you're eligible.
And Steven says, I'm also looking into HomebrewCon this year. It's going to be in his town in June. He says, does any beer drinking actually take place?
Yes.
I'm not surely he's joking.
Yeah, I sure hope so. I'm curious what the impression would be if he didn't think that there was any beer being consumed at HomebrewCon. Yes, we there will be far more beer than available to try than any reasonable human being should attempt to try. So that access to beer during HomebrewCon is not going to be a problem.
There may be people walking around with kegs strapped to their backs. I've seen that before.
So. It's happened, yeah. Yes, there are literally thousands of kegs of homebrew that are served at HomebrewCon. And we have both commercially made craft beer as well as homebrew that's available for sampling. So absolutely plenty of beer to be had at HomebrewCon.
I remember how much of a paradigm shift it was. I've been a journalist for a long time, and I went to the Great American Beer Festival. Andy Sparks and I went up there in 2005 and went to this press event because we had media badges. We went to this press event, and I can't remember who was hosting it, but the topic was how to present different beer styles to your readers or to your listeners or whatever. And they set beers on the table in front of us and then encouraged us to open them and drink them during this presentation. I was like, wow, I was blown away. I said, I'm going to like this job.
Oh, yeah.
You not only offer me beer, you encourage me to sample it right there in the thing. And it's real work. So Steven says, any ideas on which day might be best to go? I was thinking club night.
Yeah, we actually don't break up registration by the day, but certainly club night is usually for most people, that's the highlight of the conference, and that'll take place on Friday night. That'd be June 29th. But yeah, I mean the whole conference is just amazing. We expect to have over 60 different seminars. We actually had more seminar proposals than we've ever had. Mm. I would anticipate that you will see lots of names that you recognize from both amongst homebrewers as well as craft brewers, and some very very well known craft brewers have submitted some. Seminar proposals. So we're still in the process of vetting all of those, but we'll have those announced on the homebrewcon.org website here shortly.
Yeah, and if you just go to club night, you are cheating yourself, I think, because, those seminars and the panels and the discussions and there's sampling during those. You know, people talk about brewing different kinds of beers, and then you get to sample usually several samples during the presentation, so you can kind of taste, what the speaker is talking about. So there's a ton of education in addition to the social function of club night and, you know, getting to sample, you know, different wares from different clubs across the country. There is a definite educational aspect. And, you know, I don't care how long you've been brewing, you're going to learn something when you go to these seminars.
Yeah, for sure. And then, all those speakers are there for the whole conference generally, and you'll see them around. So that opportunity to talk to the John Palmers and Gordon Strongs and, you know, those kinds of people, they're all going to be there, and they're all really friendly people. So, you know, very approachable. That's the thing that I love about it is, like, you know, this whole range of levels of homebrew skill are all there, but everybody's there to help each other out. And it's just so much fun.
Yeah, I've had instances where I've been talking to somebody about, you know, a certain brewing technique or whatever, and it's like, well, I don't know, let's ask Randy Mosher, he's right over there. Let's go. let's ask John Palmer, he's right there. You know, it's an event where, you know, if you have a question about homebrewing, somebody's got a good answer there.
Yeah, for sure. And then on top of that, we have the expo, the Homebrew Expo, where we'll have 70 plus exhibitors. So all the major equipment manufacturers, the major retailers, the ingredient suppliers. So, I mean, if you've got questions on malt or hops or yeast or that fancy shiny piece of equipment you've been drooling over, it's all there to be seen, and you can talk to the people who make it, and so, you know, that's a whole nother aspect to HomebrewCon.
For sure. Yeah, there's, if you're a gadget guy or gal, there's something there for you. And Portland, there could be worse places than Portland, Oregon to have a beer thing, right?
Yes. It's not going to suck to be in Beervana. I've been to Portland many times, and it is one of my all-time favorite cities as a beer drinker. It always amazes me traveling around the city. Just like everywhere you go, it seems like every block there's another brewery that you've heard of before. It's like, wow, there's Deschutes, and I'm like, oh, you know, everywhere there's all these great breweries, and you know the city itself, the people there. It's actually one of the highest per capita consumption of craft beer compared to other cities. So, like, just a very high beer IQ just amongst the citizenry, not just the beer geeks. So that does really elevate the level of beer in the city. So, you know, everywhere you go, the restaurants, the brew pubs, the bars, like, they're all going to have great beer. And then as part of your registration with HomebrewCon, the city is giving away free Max Passes, which is the light rail system.
Whoa.
So you'll be able to get around the city for free.
That's cool.
Which is pretty awesome. Yeah.
And where is the venue? Is it close to good beer places?
Well, there's no place in Portland, as far as I know, that's not close to good beer places. That's one of the beautiful things about the city of Portland. But the conference will be at the Oregon Convention Center, which is not right downtown, but like I said, it's on the Max Line, so it's very easy to get from there to anywhere else in the city.
And when are we going to be able to register for HomebrewCon?
Registration opens on March 6th.
Wow. It's coming up.
It is.
It'll be here before we know it.
Uh-huh. And this is the 40th anniversary of HomebrewCon, so we've got a few things up our sleeve. It's also, we've got Charlie Papazian, who is the founder of the American Homebrewers Association and the guy who launched the first HomebrewCon. He is going to be our keynote speaker, so we're very excited about that.
Cool. Yeah, and another nice guy that you can just walk right up to and get your picture taken with or talk to him, or, you know, very right. accessible.
Yes, absolutely. And it's also been 20 years since the last time we were in Portland, Oregon. So that was our halfway point, I guess, for HomebrewCon. So it's been that long since the last time. Hopefully it won't take us that long, but you never know when we'll be getting back to any particular city. So the opportunity to go to HomebrewCon in Portland is pretty huge, and it might not come again for a long while. So I would recommend taking advantage of it while it's there.
Well, there you go. So you, since we talked, you guys did a survey of homebrewers. Is that right?
Yeah. So we do periodically do surveys of homebrewers to gain some information on what homebrewers are doing, how things are changing, and that kind of thing. Get demographic information. So we conducted a survey of homebrewers last year.
So who are we?
Well, the average age of the homebrewer is 40. Not terribly surprising that it's the predominantly white and male. Hopefully that will change. I think there are pockets of change happening throughout the country. But that's one of the things. Although one of the interesting things that came out of this survey was that we're actually seeing an aging demographic getting into homebrewing. The fastest growing population of homebrewers right now is people 60 years and older.
Wow. Well, people that will actually get Steve and my jokes. That's the kind of trend that I like to see.
Yeah. Well, I think, it's an interesting contrast to our previously we had done the survey in 2013. And in that survey, it was very very clear that where we were seeing the most growth was in people under the age of 30 or at least 35 and younger. So to see that shift is interesting. Really, obviously, coincides with a large baby boomer population that is reaching retirement age. Mm-hmm. So that is part of what's going on. But interesting factors, and it's data that's very useful to homebrew supply shops. So that's one of the things we use it for, is to help them understand the market and better serve their customers.
Yeah, I think that's a good trend. I think if retirees with time on their hands and maybe some disposable income, hopefully they planned well, they can turn that into good beer.
Yeah. It's there. I mean, obviously we all know it's a great hobby, and so when we welcome anybody into homebrewing. So the notion that there is a group that is has not previously been well represented, that is getting into the hobby, is great. I mean, we at the AJ are very interested in expanding the diversity amongst homebrewers, and so that's something else this survey does. It gives us benchmarks, and while we would like to see a more diverse group, I mean, it does give us some areas to work on in terms of increasing diversity and making sure that homebrewing is a welcoming hobby to everyone.
Sure. How many of them, or how many of us are there across the country?
We estimate that there are 1.1 million homebrewers in the United States right now.
Wow.
And that's probably the peak. We have seen a slowdown in growth, and it's probably leveled off a bit, although I wouldn't be surprised to see if it starts ticking up again. But I don't think we're going to be seeing the growth of 20 plus percent per year that we were seeing 5 years ago.
But as the population of homebrewers gets bigger, it's harder to get those double digit all those significant numbers of increase every year.
Right, and with there being over 6,000 breweries in the United States, I think that's certainly affected the hobby, and particularly in terms of the volume that that homebrewers are brewing. We've seen that kind of drop over time, and that has an influence on the retailers. So, you know, you got the same number of customers, but they're brewing half as much per year. Well, that's going to have a significant impact on those retailers.
Darn craft breweries making all that darn good beer.
Yeah, well, as you know, like homebrewers are the biggest supporters of their local breweries, and you know, for one reason, you probably know the guy who opened the brewery in your neighborhood, so you're going to support those breweries, and that's a great thing. But it's ultimately for probably going to having a brewery open up in your neighborhood. Hopefully, doesn't mean you're drinking more than you were previously. So, if you just weren't drinking enough, maybe that's a good thing. But you know, obviously, we support responsible consumption of alcohol, and I think homebrewers do as well. And so we do see that there's been a decrease in the volume that homebrewers are brewing, and I would attribute a lot of that to just the amazing selection of beers and the local breweries that most people have access to now.
It makes sense. Yeah, we don't encourage drunkenness and unhealthy behavior. And talking about the homebrew conference, when you go to the homebrew conference, I think you'd be pleasantly surprised at, you know, you would think that it would be a drunk fest, you know, with all this beer around, but and I think that people behave themselves pretty well. In fact, you know, better than in, just like beer fests that I've been to, just in the general public. It seems like homebrewers kind of know what they're dealing with.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. It is kind of remarkable that there are thousands of beers available, and yet homebrewers tend to be pretty self-regulating. They tend to be some of the more experienced drinkers out there, so they know their limits. We offer fairly small sample sizes, but homebrewers they're going to be taking samples wanting to really savor what's in that beer and figure out what that's all about, rather than just throwing it back and looking for the next one.
And there's a lot of
conversation at a lot of beer festivals. But.
And there's a lot of conversation going on too, and that slows you down.
Right.
when you're actually talking about the beer that you're drinking, and it kind of gets in the way of massive consumption. So, at least speaking from my experience.
Well, and also homebrewers look out for each other, so a lot of people come with their homebrew club members and whatnot, and so people will if you've had a little bit too much, somebody might let you know that hey, you probably ought to slow down, or maybe it's time to go hit your hotel room.
Yeah.
So that I think there's multiple factors in that influencing how well behaved the crowd is, despite the availability of beer pretty much everywhere you go at this event.
And there's also water. You guys are making sure that that we're well hydrated as well, which is good.
Yeah, that is one of those things that we really have to whatever venue we're at, we have to let them know, like, you will never experience a group that drinks more water than this group. Probably whatever you're used to, like, quadruple that, and maybe you'll get to what we consume.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Keep hydrated, pace yourself, eat, and keep tabs on where you are, because you want to have fun the next day too. Well, Gary,
yeah, it's a long week.
Yeah, Gary, anything else before the group?
I don't think so. I think we covered the things that I wanted to cover, but so certainly welcome anybody who's interested in entering the National Homebrew Competition or attending Homebrew Con, and check our websites, and we're available for whatever needs homebrewers have.
Awesome. Thanks, Gary.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks, James.
Well, thanks again to Gary. I'm very excited about Portland in June. And with Charlie Papazian giving the keynote as he prepares to leave the organization, It should be historic. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. Get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo, and you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can find our logbooks where you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all that out at basicbrewingshop.com. Don't forget you can join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. It's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.